Welcome to Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage. I'm Greg.
And I'm Erin. We've been married for 31 years. We're marriage counselors and we lead the marriage team here at Focus on the Family. Today, Greg, we are talking about something that every couple needs to hear about, and that's intentionality in our marriage. Because depending on the season of marriage, it can be hard, but a marriage needs time and attention to grow.
Right. You're right. Intentionality is so important. And I know that we consistently look for opportunities to connect, whether that's a date night or just something that we're doing alone at home.
We had a great date night last night. It was a really fun one.
We did.
But I know I can think through the seasons of our marriage over 31, almost 32 years, that there's been different challenges as far as going out and date nights and being intentional.
Well, one of those challenges can be not only kids and how they might get in the way, but external things like, let's say, a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that is we had a date night planned. I had reservations at a restaurant in the little town that we were living in, and we were late, couldn't get out of the house. We all get that. And so I knew that there was a brand new road that had just been put in that would serve really for us as a shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm saying to you, hey, I can, you know, get us there in half the time. I'll go down that new road.
And you were speeding.
I was speeding.
But of course, we lived in small town Arkansas, and the speed limit was, you know, like 30, especially on this new road. And I had specifically heard from multiple people, friends, that the police were hanging out there and they were giving lots of tickets basically to train people, don't speed on this new road. And so I told you as we're driving, Greg, slow down. I'm telling you, they're giving tickets out on this new road and the speed limit's 30.
And I felt we'd be fine. I didn't accept your influence. So I'm flying along and sure enough, I get pulled over. And so police officer comes up, you know, do you know how fast you were going? And, you know, what do you say in those moments? Like, I really have no idea, but I'm sure it was faster than I should have been, or you wouldn't be having a conversation with me right now.
There wouldn't be flashing lights behind my car.
And so I'm trying to be funny with the police officer, maybe thinking that'll help me get a warning. And so I'm doing my very best to engage in small talk. I think I'm making some progress until
and then I look
my
at him.
Wife.
Yes. I look at him and I said, I told him that the speed limit was 30 and that you all were handing tickets out on this road because I have heard that you've been hanging out on this road.
And
I threw you under the bus.
You totally did, under the car in this situation. So he, of course, you know, starts smiling, looks at me. And he goes, hey, nice try. He goes, license and registration. And I just one more attempt to get out of the ticket. I said, sir, if I can throw myself for the mercy of your grace and forgiveness, I said, honestly, the fact that she said all that to me and was right, and now I've got to live with that knowledge in her reminding me that she was right, I said, I will never live this down. I feel like that's adequate punishment.
And then he gave you the ticket.
And he gave me a ticket. So really, it was like double jeopardy or whatever constitutionally shouldn't be going on.
Natural consequences, buddy.
Yeah.
And then you learn to drive 30 on that road.
But we have to be intentional in our marriage and try things like date night and other ways to connect. And sometimes it will lead to an amazing evening. Other times, like that night, it's going to create some frustrations. And that's really what we want to talk about, is how do we keep our marriage strong in the midst of all, you know, the busyness and of the different seasons that we go through in marriage. So we've got some great segments coming up. Hey, later on, we're going to debunk. So I love that word. We're going to discredit a common marriage myth.
Good.
We're going to hear a question from one of our listeners who wants to know, how can he rebuild the relationship with his wife when they both have been hurt by each other?
But first, we had an amazing conversation with Brad and Marilyn Rhodes about how they learned to spend intentional time together. They're authors and speakers with some great thoughts on marriage. So let's listen to the conversation with Brad and Marilyn.
Marilyn.
I would love to dig in and hear about your first year of marriage. And Marilyn, maybe you want to start. Why was your first year of marriage so hard?
A lot of it was the expectations I brought to marriage.
Okay.
Brad is pointing to himself, by the way. You just can't see that.
She would point at me if she could.
No, it really was both of us. I would say it's fueled by believing the lies of culture that Brad's going to be my Prince Charming and we'll live happily ever after. And that is not reality. So I'm idealistic by nature. And there's only one ideal, and that's Jesus Christ. And it took a while for him to break my heart to that and see that he's the perfect lover of my soul. Mm. It's not going to be Brad. And then I wouldn't have to weep so much.
I did a good job helping lessen the temptation to put her hope in me.
You were giving her growth opportunities.
I was. She's like, she wasn't tempted to keep putting her hope in me. It's finally like, this is obviously not gonna work.
Is there like a time during that first year of marriage, like an experience that really sums up, man, this is the epitome of why it was so hard for us?
Well, but when Marilyn, when you had that epiphany about the sufficiency of Christ, that would be one. And I think we had another one when the Lord just broke me and took me to my knees.
Can you recall that?
Well, Marilyn came to me and said, "I don't need you." And I thought, I didn't know it was that bad.
I didn't say it quite like that.
It's my recollection.
I did ask for his forgiveness. I said, look, because I really was an emotional mess that whole first year and frustrated. And also, I was in graduate school getting a counseling degree. So I thought, I need to tell him everything or we're going to develop these bad patterns. And if I don't tell him, he won't know. And it's just horrible. So I went to him and said, will you forgive me? I put you in the place of God. He's my hope, not you. So that was, the Lord really broke my heart when I was crying out to the Lord, is this it? Because I was completely disillusioned with marriage. And I did love the Lord, so I knew walking out wasn't an option. So I was really just like, this is what I have to live with. And that's when he broke my heart to know your whole perspective is off.
Wow.
What Brad's talking about with me and him really breaking my heart to being completely selfish in marriage. It's not what I can get, but what I'm called to offer.
So good.
And I was going full send all in to build a law practice and wasn't paying her attention at all. So she's lonely in a new city she didn't necessarily even want to be in. I took her from Nashville. So I spent all my time building a law practice, didn't pay attention to her. She cried consistently. I really didn't understand why she was so upset until the Lord opened my eyes. So,
When she said, "Hey, I want to ask your forgiveness," like Brad, for you, was it kind of with wondering, okay, where's this going? What is she really saying? Was that legitimate or am I just getting set up here?
You know, I was so focused on building a law practice. It was just like, well, all right, I just kept going. You know, it definitely made our marriage stable, but I was so not focused on the marriage. I can't say it impacted me significantly one way or the other. I mean, I was glad she wasn't on me all the time anymore. But the Lord got on me in a sense and convicted me later. And that may have been when I was saved.
Yeah. How long after she came to you was it that you kind of had that epiphany and reconnection with God?
I would estimate probably 5 or 6 months, maybe less. It was an experience that I knew God had changed me inside. I knew it was never going back.
And how long did it take then for you guys to notice your marriage then felt different? Because it was hard, you were struggling.
It was immediate. It was literally. I came back. And I said, the only thing that's going to be different is everything. She had taken the pressure off me, put her hope in God. I said, look, I don't expect you to believe me. I wouldn't believe me. But from that day on, we went on a date once a week for the last 27 years. Wow. Everything changed. And we went from a stagnant to a great marriage, really over a weekend. Wouldn't you say, Marilyn?
Yes, of course. It's not perfect. Yeah. It's work. It's hard. And it's dying to self every day. We went from completely selfish, both of us, self-absorbed to realizing, hey, it's putting the interest of his above myself, and both doing that. And of course, we don't do that every day. And that's when we have to be reminded of those favorite verses that take us back to what we know.
Awesome. Awesome. What would you say was the most impactful thing during that time, the step that you guys took toward a healthier marriage? You said going out on date nights, dying to self. What would you say, a couple listening, they're hearing you talk about, we went from disconnected to connected. What would you say was the number one thing that you guys did that you would encourage them to do?
I don't know about Marilyn, but I find that time is the container to grow a marriage in. And I started giving the marriage time. We communicated more. Why? We spent more time together. We connected at a deeper level. Why? We spent more time together. Now, the Lord grew us in grace and other things, but it was prioritizing marriage over the law practice. I think one author said, if you put anything ahead of marriage other than Jesus, your marriage will slowly die. And I clearly had my success over my marriage before that change.
So it was a radical repositioning of time.
I would say outside our relationship with Christ, which is by far the most important fuel to do what we're talking about, is going on a date once a week. It's kind of like that pursuit of the Lord and continue relationship. You, over time, you get so close and your relationship gets sweeter and sweeter. And it, I think it's the same in marriage. When you regularly spend time together, your marriage will grow. Every date won't be great, but over the long haul, if you're pursuing each other and pursuing that time together, you're going to grow sweeter and sweeter.
What do you guys do typically then on your date? Because I know, I mean, we hear that advice. Is it just, well, we go out and do something new and have some fun new experience, or we're going out to eat so we can have deep conversation? Like, what have you found really seems to make a difference on your date?
It depends on the season of life, I think, that you're in. There are seasons where it's easier to have fun. I think seasons of the year, it's easier to be creative on your dates in the summer and fall, right, when you can get outside. The winter, we seem to lag a little more. There's not much to do outside, so it's coffee or talking at a restaurant.
We picked it up lately. I took you to hot yoga.
He took me to hot yoga.
Oh, wow.
Yes, after dinner. It was a terrible idea.
Oh, my.
Don't ever do that.
I signed up for the free trial.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, nice. We were figuring it was going to be dancing or something. But
that's some creativity.
You're doing the hot yoga.
Yeah,
that's
don't
great.
Ever take me to hot yoga after dinner. Maybe before.
That's what I said. If we were going to do this, it needs to be before we have dinner.
We pulled up and she looked at me and she goes, really? I'm like, we're already registered to sign up.
We're going.
Get ready to do some sweating in the sweat lodge. Yes. Yeah.
You know, early in marriage, we also traded babysitting because it's expensive to date. And so we traded with another family and our families got so close and our kids got close and took turns. And
it's helpful because I know oftentimes couples will say, oh, to go to dinner and a movie and babysitting, it's just way too expensive. Or you could just try every free trial yoga class in town.
That's right.
And your date is free.
we do. I mean, we would just brew a pot of coffee, go down by the river and just drink coffee. Early in our marriage, we didn't really have the resources. So we would trade babysitting. The point is just spending time together. It's not making sure it's some elaborate, expensive things to show you care for one another. You show you care for one another by allocating time to one another.
Well, I really appreciate Brad and Marilyn's honesty. And I think Marilyn talked about when they were being so idealistic during their first year of marriage and really having some unrealistic expectations for Brad, for their marriage, and all of us deal with that. I mean, we all deal with probably unrealistic expectations. So I thought, let's really get into that and talk about how do we make unrealistic expectations realistic.
Totally. And thinking about an unrealistic expectation, it's good to understand what are these, even through definition. And, you know, when you look at an expectation is something that we think this is how things should be. Like things are supposed to go this way. And the problem is they're unrealistic when we hold them inside or we act on them without putting it out there and evaluating if it's realistic, especially in marriage, because marriage involves two people. And so often when we assume that things are supposed to go a certain way or how we want them to go, and we don't discuss it with our spouse, well, then that's unrealistic. Making it realistic is putting it out in the light and talking it through.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, like one expectation that I have is that if you're not in a room that all the lights should be turned off. And the other day I came home and I walked into our basement and all the lights were on. And you and Annie were both got like no one is home. And it just, it always just irritates the life out of me because I'm like, no one's around. Why are we keeping lights on?
I agree with that one, that the lights should be off in the basement if no one is there.
All right.
However,
I'm going to make this your ringtone, by the way, that statement that you agree with me.
No. Let's go upstairs out of the basement okay. into the main living area. And there, I like one light on in the kitchen. When I'm doing dishes or doing homework or even watching TV, I like one light on. Otherwise, it's dark.
Right.
And I will walk into the kitchen, turn the light on, and walk out to go to the bathroom and come back in and the light's off. And I'm like, oh, my word.
It is a
constant battle.
Jesus, you know, said, let there be light. And he also said that, you know, let there not be light when no one is around.
No.
It's in the Bible.
So we clearly need to work that one through because it is not realistic for the lights all to be off all the time. When we're home, I think one light needs to be on at least.
Well, and again, I mean, there's bigger expectations in life, in our marriage, than lights on or off. I mean,
like, you know, keeping the counter clean?
Yes, could be keeping the there it is. That's, right there on my notes.
That is big. And of course, Annie and I both do all of our homework at the island. Annie, her stuff carries across the living room.
It's like a homework place. Part closet. It's always got clothes on it, you know, but, food. It's
yes,
all kinds
but
of stuff.
My side of the counter, the opposite end of the island, is mine just sprawls. And then I start stacking up. So it doesn't move from the island. Annie's sprawls across the entire room.
And the reality is we all have expectations of how we think things should go. How we want them to go.
For sure.
And yet in marriage, there, like you said, Aaron, there are two of us. Uh-huh. And you've heard us talk about this before. There has to be room for both of us. It is not my job to make Aaron into my image of how I think things should happen in work. And we know we're going to bump into these expectations. So let's talk real quick then about how we deal with them. In a way that will feel good to both of us.
Yes. First and foremost, we have to identify it or recognize it because so often we're frustrated and we don't know why. Often I will ask myself, okay, what was I wanting to happen or what was I expecting to happen? Because then that gives...
What was I wishing or hoping would have happened? Yeah.
This gives more... it helps to solidify that expectation as far as what is it?
Yeah. Like I, you know, like a good example of an expectation is that when we're going out for a date and I get pulled over, my expectation is my wife doesn't help the police in that situation, but supports me trying to get out of the
ticket. Of course, you know, we did that personality assessment yeah. on Sunday night. Lovely that that's what we do for fun.
And you're a rule follower. I
am a rule follower. Yeah. I have a deep, deep sense of morality.
You did the right thing.
You'd be crossing my ethical boundaries with me not telling the police officer I told you so.
Well, it's really like you're saying, the first step is to just acknowledge that, okay, for me, that is an expectation, right or wrong, good or bad.
Yes.
It's something that I expect because that's then what we want to bring to each other and have that conversation. So if my expectation is that all lights will be off when no one is in a room, you know, that may work or not work for you. And it's fair for me then.
If you were a single bachelor, sure, that's realistic, but you're not.
I'm gonna install the clapper, you know, where you just clap on, you know, clap off. And so regardless, I'll just be clapping, applauding, and all the lights will go off. But it is, therefore, to bring that expectation forward, to say, you know what, Aaron, actually, I'm realizing that this is frustrating me because my expectation is that, you know, when no one is in that room, that the lights are off, so we're not, you know, wasting money to whatever degree. I get it. And then by doing that, mm-hmm. so we're taking something that often an expectation is unseen, unknown.
Right.
Like I may not even be aware of it, and we're bringing that forward into the light so yes. that together we can evaluate that
right.
and decide together, is that realistic or not? And right. so I could say, hey, Aaron, is that a realistic expectation for when, you know, you're not in a room, that before you leave that room, if you know you're not coming back, that you just shut the yeah. lights off?
You know, what's interesting is that in premarital counseling.
That was a question, actually, that I'm waiting for your answer.
Oh, really?
I'm hoping that okay. you agree that that's an appropriate.
Start
I'm
over.
Just messing with you. You were saying that in premarital
yeah. counseling, it's a common exercise yeah. that the premarital therapist will take the couple through a list of expectations yeah. for marriage.
Yeah. So and they can talk
they
about
talk
that.
About unrealistic yeah. expectations are hidden, and bringing them into the light makes them, you know, and discussed and agreed upon makes them realistic. And, you know, it's interesting because I don't know that a lot of couples do that beyond premarital counseling.
Right.
But obviously, there are things that have to be discussed through different seasons.
Well, and we all – and again, if you're sitting there going, well, you know, I don't have any expectations. We've talked – I mean, the list goes on. You know, whoever cooks, someone cleans, don't talk to others about the problems going on within our home, never go to bed angry, you know, don't be late without calling, put the toilet seat down. So there's thousands of
yes.
those.
We could even put a list of common expectations within marriage in the show notes.
All right, we'll do that. So getting back to our example of the lights.
Oh, we're
so
back to that.
If I said to you, my expectation is if we're not in that room any longer, you know, do we turn the main lights off? Is like, what would be the right expectation?
The right expectation would be if we are leaving, we can shut them off. Or if we're leaving that room for an extended period of time. Because what happens is I go to the bathroom and come back and the light's off. And I'm like, I've been sitting here working for an hour.
It is a Festivus miracle. I do not know
And I go
how
to the
happens.
Bathroom for 5 minutes and I come back and the light's off. Then I just have to turn it back on again.
It's probably our golden doodle Olive that's doing that.
No.
So you're saying, so again, this is how this works, that we put that out there.
Yes.
And then we both kind of, you know, talk it through to go, okay, this is what's realistic. So you're saying that what's realistic, and I like this, is that if we're leaving, mm-hmm. you know, the house, or we're mm-hmm. leaving that room for sure.
Or let's say we're going into the basement where there's no lights on.
Or if we're leaving a room for an extended period of
yes.
time, then it's
yes.
okay to have lights shut off.
Totally.
All right. I like it. And that's really all we're saying, is that become aware of the things that I'm hoping, expecting, wanting, wishing will happen, and then recognize there's two of us, both of us matter, so then I want to put that out there to you.
But
we can then negotiate
yes.
through what feels like a win to both of us, and thus we've created a realistic expectation.
So to just circle back a little bit, what I hear
you're
you
getting nervous.
Saying, what I hear you saying is no longer when I walk out of a room and I come back in 2 minutes later, the light is going to be off. Is that correct?
I will not do that, trusting that if you are really leaving and vacating that room for an extended period of time, or leaving to go to work or whatever, that those will go off.
Perfect.
Well, if you want to go deeper and learn really how you can be more intentional in your marriage, not just about expectations, but in other areas, you know, we really encourage you, get Brad Maryland's book. It's called The Grace Marriage: How the Gospel and Intentionality Will Transform Your Marriage. And we have that available at Focus on the Family for a gift of any amount. When you get that book, you're supporting our show, so we want to thank you for your generosity.
Yes, and all the details will be in the show notes.
Well, certainly in our culture, there are so many different myths about marriage. For example, you know, we've heard it said before that, well, you know, marriage should be easy if you're married to the one. So if this person is the one, then obviously the marriage is going to be easy. You know, another one that we hear a lot about is, you know, marriage sex will always be amazing and full of passion and never take work and effort and will just be so spontaneous.
All the time.
All the time. And then even another one is once you're married, you'll never feel lonely. So mm-hmm. there's no such thing as, you know, married alone.
Right.
And there are lots of myths out there. Another one is that a healthy marriage should be conflict free. And that's really, we want to spend some time talking about that one. So let's debunk, Aaron, that myth that in a healthy marriage, there should never be, you know, conflict.
Yes. And I sit all day long with couples in my counseling practice, normalizing conflict to let couples know that it's not a matter of if, but when you have conflict, but that everybody has conflict, and conflict is an opportunity to learn and to grow as an individual and as a couple. And I will often talk about what your dad always said, that healthy conflict is the doorway to intimacy, that we can go to deeper levels of connection when we work through conflict and repair it.
Yeah, because I like that, because what I hear you saying is that, hey, when you're married to a different person with different backgrounds, experiences, perspectives, mm-hmm. as we try to live in close proximity year after year after year, right, we're going to run into differences.
Totally.
We're not always going to see eye to eye.
Yes.
And we, you know, within our marriage, we try to allow for both people to matter, to have your feelings and your perspective and all that, but it's hard to make that work. There's times where our differences, as we bump into each other, mm-hmm. it's going to create conflict. But that's normal. That's not a sign that something's wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, I would the caveat to that is how we choose to then handle those differences mm-hmm. certainly can be healthy or unhealthy.
Completely.
So when we're yelling and constantly avoiding and withdrawing, whatever, I mean, some of those more combat ways of managing conflict certainly would need to be dealt with, and but the fact is, you're right. Everybody's going to go through conflict mm-hmm. and differences.
Well, yeah, because of our differences, we're going to experience conflict. But again, reframing it as a growth opportunity that as you work through it, you learn.
Yeah, it's really the essence of James 1:2 that says when trials happen, when hard times, difficulties, conflicts, when all that goes on, consider that an opportunity. So it talks about joy. But there's lots of opportunities when you and I have those moments to where we're in disagreement, when we're arguing, when we're in conflict, you know, the opportunity is that I probably get to learn something about myself, mm-hmm. maybe about you that I didn't mm-hmm. know, or something about our marriage, some habit or, you know, pattern that needs to be changed or fixed or, you know, done away with.
Yeah. And even we encourage couples to really focus on repairing conflict, not resolving conflict, because it's kind of like, you know, if we resolve conflict, well, then it's never going to come back.
Right.
But that doggone cycle happens and it continues to happen. The reactive cycle, we've talked a lot about that, a conflict cycle. We all have one and it doesn't ever go away. It improves. And we can manage it. But the biggest thing is healthy couples repair conflict.
Yeah. And what that means is that we take a moment to revisit how, you know, that argument or whatever was going on, you know, whatever wounded us, hurt us, you know, how that made both of us feel, and just care about the emotions. And then if we need to come up with some sort of solution, then mm-hmm. we can do that in a way that feels good.
Yeah, as
to
teammates
both of us.
And really coming up with a win-win.
Well, now we're going to move on to our weekly Q&A. And this is the part of the show where we get to answer your burning questions about marriage.
Please send us your questions. You can click the link in the show notes or go to crazylittlethingcalledmarriage.com and click the button on the side of the show page to leave us a voicemail. And if your question gets answered on the show, we're going to send you a copy of our book, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, 12 Secrets for a Lifelong Romance, for free, as our way of saying thank you for listening and reaching out to us.
Well, today's question comes from Noah. So let's listen to the voicemail that he sent in.
Me and my wife were separated from around Christmas Eve up until mid-January. Due to some issues. For the past 2 years, I'd been extremely emotionally and verbally hurtful to her, and I hadn't realized the effect that had had on our marriage. And because of that, and her feeling unloved and uncared for, she had sought to feel that love elsewhere. Since we've been reconciled back together, the Lord has just been working on us, and it's been great, but the betrayal trauma is still there. And then for my wife, the trauma of being shut down and hurt verbally is still there. How do we rebuild that trust back? And what do we do?
Mm-hmm. Noah, thank you so much for your message and for your question. I just so admire that you guys are battling for your marriage and for repair of the pain that has happened. And that's necessary. That's a necessary step in moving forward.
Yeah, because I think one of the, maybe let's even call it a myth that I bought into early on in our marriage is that trust is something that can be earned once and for all. So Noah, you're asking about trust. And I really think the discussion begins with really understanding that trust is something that is never earned once and for all. Mm. It's really my ability in my marriage to show up as trustworthy. And then Erin gets to decide if she's willing to trust me. And trust can be broken instantly. I mean, any given day to whatever degree, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a lot in small ways we can break trust. You know, there are certainly like, no, you're talking about, there's big ways that we can break trust. But my expectation is never that, oh, well, now Erin and I have reached this place of, oh, we fully trust each other.
Mm-hmm. There's something so empowering about recognizing that we get to decide when we extend trust.
Yeah.
They get to decide if that person is showing up trustworthy. The other person's job is to focus on their journey between them and God and showing up as a trustworthy spouse,
yeah.
a trustworthy husband or wife. And I think that's empowering because really it boils down to that each individual knows what to do with their heart when the other one doesn't show up trustworthy. Mm. They know how to pull their heart back and care for it, minister to it, let God minister to it. And then they can walk back out and let the other spouse know, like, hey, that hurt. I don't like that.
Yeah, that didn't feel safe.
Yes, and maybe there's an opportunity for repair. Hey, are you open to talking about that, what that was like for me? Or are you willing to share what that was like for you? And hopefully repair can happen. And repair isn't something that also happens once and for all. It's an ongoing conversation that if it arises again, if the other person's heart brings it up, then it's leaning in and going, oh, wait, it's coming up again. It's an opportunity.
Yeah. And so, Noah, really what we're saying is that what you have control over is you, whether or not that in any given moment, how am I being trustworthy to your spouse? How am I being trustworthy to Erin? And Erin gave some few examples of those. But again, I think a great place within how you were describing your relationship is to really to do that hard work to understand, yeah, what was going on for me around the abuse in what led me to more the verbal or emotional things mm-hmm. that I would say and do, and to make sure that you go to a good counselor and kind of work through that, because I would imagine your wife will feel safer and thus maybe more willing to trust when she believes that you have some really good insight and awareness and you've done some hard work to deal with whatever was really driving that behavior.
As well as acknowledging the pain, the impact of your behavior. And I always just so appreciate when someone who has dealt with anger or, you know, rage, when they're able to get hold of, it is not okay. It is not okay for me to rage at Greg. It is not okay for me to rage at my children. And so if someone is struggling with that, when they recognize it and then they're just heartbroken over how their behavior has impacted the family.
Yeah, that's great to be able to really then jump into what we often call as heart talk. And that's really where you're focused on the emotions and what was that like for you? And tell me how that impacted you. And I'm going to care. I'm just going to listen here, validate that, empathize around that.
Yeah.
And that creates, again, that level of trust the more I'm willing to jump in to understand your pain, well, in that moment, you know, I probably feel safer. And so it's just it would be a great question if you're willing to go to your wife and say, help, give me some definition. What is it that when I do it feels like I'm being trustworthy? Mm-hmm. And just, you know, just listen and try to generate a list, because those are the kinds of things that really, the more you do that, that's how trust is reestablished, knowing that at any given point, because we're human, you know, we can violate that trust and make it to where our spouse doesn't feel safe. And then, Aaron, like you were saying, then it's that person's job to pull back, pull their heart back, and make sure they're well cared for so that they can ultimately reengage when they feel like the spouse is being safe again.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Well, thanks to Noah for your question, and look out for your copy of Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage. And if you're listening today and have any questions for us, please contact us. Click the link in the show notes and leave us a voicemail. Thank you for joining us for Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage. Sometimes finding time to be intentional with your spouse can be hard, but we hope we gave you some practical tips to get started.
Yeah, and how not to approach a situation where you've been pulled over and about to get a speeding ticket. So,
or
hopefully,
how about not to speed
and accepting your wife's influence.
Yes, not to speed on a new road when your wife knows they're giving tickets out.
See, that's how helpful we are. Well, be sure to like, listen, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to share this episode with your friends. You know, we want you to have a seat at the table every week as we help equip you and your spouse to have a lifelong and satisfying marriage. We want to see you growing spiritually as individuals and as a couple so that you can turn around and invest in another couple to help them build a thriving marriage.
Thanks again for listening. We'll talk with you again next week about this crazy little thing called marriage.
Is your marriage holding on by a thread? For deep hurt, you need deep healing that only comes from the Lord. And you'll find it at a Focus on the Family Hope Restored Intensive in Michigan. Our licensed Christian counselors will help you and your spouse get to the root of your issues in just 3 to 5 days. And it works. 80% of the couples are still married 2 years after attending. Learn more at HopeRestored.com and talk with a trusted advisor. That's HopeRestored.com.